Hey, welcome to The Interactive Journey. Come along with us as we share the stories of parents, children, and professionals navigating a challenging world of various diagnoses, life transitions, and being human.
Thank you for tuning in. If this is your first time, welcome. We're so glad you're here. If this is your second or third or fourth time, thanks for returning. This is Rachel Watson. I am one of your hosts of The Interactive Journey. We also have Logan over there.
Hello.
And Megan, she is here to my left.
Hey.
I'm also to her left, just in case anyone else is
left. Actually, yeah. Everybody's left. Got somebody to their left. We are here today.
Or to their right, because it's a circle.
Clowns to the left, me, jokers to the right.
Exactly.
Really? It's really been a long morning.
I'm stuck in the middle with them. Keep going.
Our guests need no introduction, but we will attempt to do one anyway. We have Mary Usher here.
Hi.
She is one of our amazing board-certified behavior analysts here at Interactive Kids. She is also supervisor of the early BA department. Sorry, guys. We were just kind of debating what is the official name of our department here. Early ABA Services. Write that down. We also have Nick Carrara here. He is the director of Early ABA Services in Cherry Hill.
Hi, everybody.
Thanks for joining us today.
Of course.
Welcome to our circus. So tell us a little bit about yourselves.
Go ahead, Nick. Okay. Take it away.
So I'm Nick. I'm Nick Carrara. I have been with Interactive Kids for about 9 years now. I started out as an ABA therapist and have worked my way up to now becoming director, which has been a great experience in itself. I have worked in a number of different settings in ABA. I've worked in schools. I've worked in homes. I've worked in adult day programs. I've worked in the Early Learners Program, and have found through all that experience that this is where I want to be. I like working with the little kids. It's very rewarding. It also matches my personality. I like to play. I like to be playful. And the Early ABA Services Department allows me to do that.
He likes to be a little kid is what we're saying here.
But you did just say that you are a grumpy old man as well. So
I think balance is important.
And we also have Mary.
Hi, I'm Mary Usher. I am the supervisor of the Early ABA Department in Linwood. I have been with Interactive Kids for
Almost 2 years.
I started with IK. I wasn't just in Early Learners at Linwood, but I did start at Linwood. I had clients in our Early ABA Department, as well as our Elementary Department and our school-based program in Cherry Hill. And then I fully transitioned to Early ABA Department in April of 2022. And I honestly really enjoy being with the little kids, with the majority of my experience honestly being with adults. It really allowed me to get the experience and see like how learning history really impacts behavior. And that's, I think, why I really enjoy working with the little kids, because those early services really do make an impact later on in life. So I enjoy the little kids being goofy and playing and having all the fun times every single day.
But both of you have a lot of experience with children, adolescents, and adults overall, but also with intense behaviors. Can you talk a little bit about your history with that, Mary?
Sure. So I actually worked for about 9 years for a large organization in the state of New Jersey, and I primarily worked with adults at an acute behavioral campus. So they lived on the campus and they also attended day program at the campus. We honestly primarily worked on behavior reduction and just trying to stabilize their behaviors. And then eventually, if we were able to work on, you know, adaptive skills, maybe some pre-employment skills, and then transition them into our off-campus settings for a day program, as well as just a traditional group home in a regular anyone's neighborhood. So I was there for several years, and then I started doing some consultation on the side, which then kind of led to me leaving that large organization and going with consultation full time and getting that experience with kiddos, and then eventually coming to Interactive Kids.
Was it Dean or James that got you here?
Actually, it was Victoria Edwards that got me here. So Victoria, who's in our adult department here at Lynwood, we worked together for another company in the area. And she actually was the ABA therapist for the couple of the cases that I worked on. And she obviously passed her boards. She got a job here. She reached out to me to see if I still had some of the concerns that I had previously and said, I'm at Interactive Kids. I really like it. Can you reach out? And sure enough, I got a nice email from Dr. Bailey, who I previously worked with. And Victoria was like, I didn't know you had your doctorate. I was like, I don't, because I received a nice
but
email.
But if you know James Bailey, everybody has your doctorate.
Hello, Dr. Usher. I was like, oh, hey, James. Like, how long did we share an office together? So I was like, if James is there, it has to be a great place.
And Nick, how did you find us so long ago?
So I was working in a local school district in Camden County, and I was an aide with a child with autism there in fourth grade. And the director of their special services department, the district itself consulted with Interactive Kids at the time, and the special education director there knew that I was in my master's program to obtain my BCBA and said, hey, call this person Melissa Torpy. I think that you'll be able to help out. And then also in that school, Rebecca Miller was a kindergarten teacher there, and she worked for Interactive Kids part-time. So between the director there talking to Rebecca and then finally making that phone call to Melissa, she brought me on and put me right into a case that we still have contact with this client right now. I think Melissa is probably having lunch with him as we speak.
Wow, that's so funny. Yeah. What motivated you to even get in this field before that? Like, what made you pick? There's so many different service fields you could get into. Why this?
So I got my undergrad degree was in psychology. So as is common, I had no idea what I was going to do with it.
Nothing without a master's.
Yeah, that's right. Pretty much. Sure. Yep. You know, you watch all the shows and you're like, I'm going to be a counselor. I'm gonna you know, help all these people, and somebody's sitting on a couch in front of me all day. Didn't turn out that way. So actually, I was working as a valet at a country club, and somebody who worked there said, hey, why don't you try and apply to the Yale Schools, which is an alternative school for children with autism. And I said, sure, why not? I had at that point not heard about ABA, started working in this school and learned what ABA was, and it just made sense to me. It just clicked. This is what I've been looking for. The other aspect of working in that school that clicked for me was the environment itself, being in a classroom, being in the world of education, working with, it was high school at the time, but still kids, working with kids just felt right to me. So from there is where I learned about ABA and decided to pursue it as a master's degree.
How about you, Mary? What made you choose?
So I actually changed my major several times while I was in college.
The list. What were they?
Well, I initially wanted to be a physician assistant. Mm-hmm. And then I changed to nursing. Mm-hmm. Then I changed to speech pathology. And then I was just like, I can't keep switching, adding different classes and coursework. So I was like, let me just finish. It's my last year. But I knew I didn't want to be a speech pathologist. But I knew I wanted to kind of just have my bachelor's degree and be done. So I needed a job. So I don't even remember exactly who, but someone had told me about Bancroft, which I was like, okay, like that sounds good. Like, I think I obviously want to work with people, but I'm not 100% sure. I did my senior year start looking for other like programs of what I wanted to do. Someone had mentioned ABA. I did see Rowan, which is not too far from where I live and down here, had a program, but I was like, I'm not going to, you know, just make a decision since I've changed my mind so many times on this. Like, let me work for a little bit and then decide what I want to do. So I got a job at Bancroft, not necessarily knowing that they were very, like, heavy with the ABA programming in place, and more or less just thought, like, oh, like, it's, like, group homes. And then I got placed at the Acute Behavioral Campus, which I honestly really enjoyed it there. But so when I was working there, one of the girls that I worked with, she was actually in Rowan's program and she was doing her research project and she needed someone to help her with collecting some data and doing some sessions with her. So I was like, wow, this actually really works. Like, we're teaching this guy, like, you can do this, but you just need to, we use like different picture icons for whatever we were working on. So I was like, oh, like this actually is really cool. So then I had just kind of expressed an interest to people in higher positions that I wanted to gain more experience. I'd come in and like help with sessions that they were doing if they needed a therapist or to collect data. And that's kind of what motivated me to go back to school for ABA. And then I was fortunate enough, I honestly personally started looking for programs. And then someone within Bancroft told me that they were going to be starting a program with Ryder. So I attended that program for the first cohort. Yeah.
Initiated the program. That's awesome. For
that. Yeah.
Really it's nice. Funny because I can see Mary doing every single one of those.
Me
majors.
Too. I can picture. I'm like, oh yeah, physicians.
I was like, she could be a PA. But
the thing
she
is,
could be this.
Like, I get sick. I don't know why. Like, there was just like a snap or something like that changed. Like, I can't even watch Grey's Anatomy right now. Like, and it's fake blood. I watched it last week. I was like, oh my God. Like, fast forward. So I'm like, why did I want to do that? Like, I don't know.
So what did you end up majoring in?
For my bachelor's,
yeah.
It's in speech language.
Oh, okay.
Pathology, okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It's great.
Yeah.
So you both found your way to ABA.
Yes.
And I think that probably a lot of us who are in this field found our way to ABA. It wasn't necessarily where we were going to begin with because, like, I'm a psych major too and didn't know what I wanted to do and kind of found this. But now that you have, it seems like you both have found a little bit of a home with the younger population, at 5 and under particularly. Not that you couldn't work beautifully with any age, but tell us a little bit about what is early ABA services. What exactly does that mean? Because we also sometimes will use interchangeably early learners as an example, or home-based services or things like that. So tell us a little bit about early ABA services.
So when I think of early ABA services, Mary, you kind of touched on this earlier in talking about working with adults and they, or even, you know, older children, they have very strong behavior patterns already established. So in the early ABA department, we can start to establish those behavior patterns in a more positive way. So what we do is we teach communication. We are teaching appropriate communication skills because all behavior, as we know, is a form of communication. So in the early ABA department, that's where our focus is on developing verbal behaviors to give these kids a foundation on which to grow. And that starts with their ability to communicate and interact appropriately in their environments.
Why is communication so important?
It's how you get everything. It's how you do everything. You need to have an appropriate mode of communication to function. Otherwise, you're not going to get your needs met, nor are you going to meet the needs of others. So you need to be able to communicate both expressively and receptively with your environment in order to access the naturally occurring reinforcement that we all want.
And to be able to refuse, right?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah.
Because when I know you both have mentioned some more of the challenging behaviors we might encounter, that is part of it as well, is sometimes it could be to reject things. And I just know my own experiences, some of the families that I've worked with don't always realize like the importance of that for communication as well. So when I said early learners, so what is, when we talk about interactive kids, the early learners department, what is that? Or not
so,
a portion of the early ABA services.
Okay. So we're the early ABA services, and within that we have our center-based program, which is the early learners program. So within early learners, we have program running, obviously, Monday through Friday, and offer kids to come for full-day services or part-time services, whatever, obviously, insurance approves or whatever we think is clinically appropriate for them. And then we, outside of our early learners program, we do offer our in-home services as well for those children. If there's maybe areas that we can work on in-home with them, whether it's, I don't know, adaptive skills. And then both of them include the parent caregiver training component.
Okay, so tell us a little bit more about that, the parent caregiver training component.
Okay, so parent caregiver training. Obviously, parents, caregivers are just getting that first diagnosis of autism. So oftentimes just kind of going over like what autism is and maybe like what specific criteria based off of DSM, like that they're maybe seeing that their child is engaging in certain behaviors or having some deficits. So with that, we'll kind of go over their individualized behavior plan that we would put in place based off of assessments, identify some antecedent strategies, so what we can do to try to prevent some of those maladaptive behaviors or maybe increase opportunities for success with antecedent strategies. And then if their child is engaging in maladaptive behaviors or even just instances of maybe not being compliant, really just going over some consequence strategies. So what should they do when they're seeing those problematic behaviors?
And I like to jokingly tell parents that my job is to not have to do my job anymore. That is tongue in cheek, but the concept and the idea of that is true, that we want to make sure that all of the skills that we have and the way that we can get their children through the routines of the day, we want parents and caregivers to be able to do that as well. So I think it's a crucial piece that should be a part of everybody's individualized ABA program, because the fact is they're not always going to be at school. They're not always going to be with us in the early learners. They're going to spend a large majority of their time at home, and we need to make sure that the parents have a good understanding of the things that we have instilled, and making sure that those behavior patterns that I mentioned earlier maintain through these kids' lives.
You are often the first people that they're talking to when a diagnosis is received. How do you help parents navigate that new information that can be cause anger or fear or
denial?
I mean, there's so many, and I'm sure I can't speak because I haven't had that experience, but what I've seen is it's a swirling pool of all of those feelings. How do you help them?
Now, from what I've heard, I don't have children of my own, but the way that I've kind of understand it and try to understand it is that there's a grieving period that goes along with being diagnosed with autism. The life that you had planned out in your head for your child is now suddenly derailed. It's our job to help build up that direction again and let them know that there's still a good outcome at the end of this road. Like we can help them get there. So I think it's a matter of presenting a comfortable place, a place where they can rely on us, and also making sure that they understand every aspect and every step along the way, that there's nothing that is foreign to them. And that's a big thing too, that they can understand, one, the diagnosis itself and some of the things that go along with being an individual with autism, but also how to better help and how to make sure that the ideas and the plans and the hopes and dreams that they have for their children, how to make sure that they can get as close as they can possibly get to those.
That's great. So with parent training, what does that look like? Is that courses that people take? They sign up for some kind of course for you for parent training? Or is it individual? Is it group? What does that look like?
So I know currently we're doing more individualized parent training. I know if there were certain topics that parents maybe wanted further information on, we do have recorded trainings, but typically it's one-on-one. It can occur in person. They're more than welcome to come to the office for parent training if that's the best place. Oftentimes, depending on what we're working on, if we're working on toilet training or mealtime, those would probably be better addressed in home with the parents. So you can go into the home, and then also parent training should occur frequently. So I understand parents have very busy schedules, so it doesn't always have to be in person. If we want, we can meet on the phone. We could do a Zoom meeting, whatever works for them to meet the needs of the learner.
So it's more hands-on. It's not necessarily a focus on these are the concepts that you understand. Not that that isn't important, but it's doing it with them or demonstrating.
It's not just, here's the behavior plan, I'll send it to you in an email, but it's like, here's the behavior plan, let's go over it together, ask me any questions, I'm going to model it for you and demonstrate it. We can do it with your child as well to make sure, because obviously if I sit with a parent and implement something in a behavior plan with them, it's super, super simple because obviously, one, they're adult, but obviously doing it with their child is a lot different because they might engage in some problem behaviors while you're trying to do it. So it's not going to be picture perfect, but it's more realistic to what their everyday life is. So doing it with the child and with them, answering any questions, having them implement the plan, giving them some feedback.
Yeah, it's really, it's whatever works. It's what works for the family and the parents, and also what do they need. So we could spend time teaching them about all of these basic ABA concepts, but that might not be what this family needs. That family might need, like Mary's saying, the very specific training of this is how you're going to get through the grocery store with little Tommy. And these are the things that we've done. This is what we've taught him. So now we want you to be able to do the same thing. Use this token board. Use this visual schedule so that you can get your grocery shopping done. There are other parents that do want more information. They want to know the nitty gritty. They want to know the specifics of ABA. And then you have to find a balance of, okay, that's great that you want to know that. Here's some book recommendations. Here's some websites. Here's some things that you can look to. But here's what we need to do for your child and your specific instance so that we can efficiently provide that training to them.
So that's one way that I would think that it's a little different than a, you know, more of a what we would consider a typical preschool, either your district preschool or a private preschool. How else is your early learners program different from a more traditional preschool program?
I think there's a number of reasons. One is we have the freedom and luxury to individualize every aspect of your child's day. We don't have to follow a specific curriculum. We're not part of a district. So we can make sure that your child is getting exactly what he or she needs. We can also cater to schedules. If you have conflicts and logistical obstacles to overcome to get to us, we can work with you and make sure that your child can still get to us versus that bus showing up at 7:30. And if you're not on it, then, you know, your
services have sailed.
Right, exactly. So a little bit of flexibility there. We also have the benefit of being able to provide each child with a one-to-one highly trained therapist. That's not something that every child that goes into a school setting will get, but we can make sure that that does happen for our kids. And plus, like you said, that parent training aspect. I think a lot of times from schools you get maybe there's a back-to-school night, or maybe you get a communication book that's written back and forth, but that's not necessarily enough for everybody. You might want to have a little bit more connection with what your kids are doing day in and day out, and we can provide that as well.
Well, speaking of a program that has such roots in applied behavior analysis and ABA, that I think is something that maybe other providers as well, not just the one that happens to be here at Interactive Kids, but in general, the focus really is perhaps a little bit different than many schools can provide. What exactly does that look like when you say, you don't say this, but I've heard parents say, oh, we're going to a preschool, and they're a preschool at Interactive Kids, which really it isn't a preschool. It's an intensive therapy situation, but we're going there and they're doing ABA. So what exactly are you doing when you're doing ABA?
A lot of things. ABA, in my mind, is a method of teaching. And then what changes per child is what are we teaching? Now, there are some generalities that we have in early ABA, like verbal behavior is something that, yes, we are teaching verbal behaviors. We are teaching social skills, but we're using the principles of ABA to teach whatever each child needs. We could go into the whole definition of ABA and what it encompasses, right. But I don't think that's what everybody wants to hear. But yeah, I think it is a teaching method, and we teach what we need to teach.
What Nick said, everything's individualized. So when we first get that application for a client, we're looking at the application, we're meeting with the family, doing like a parent caregiver interview just to see what the needs are of the child, and not just kind of going with that interview and running and putting goals in place, but then doing specific assessments based off of that interview. And then from the assessments, coming up with goals that we'll implement into our programming.
So you talked a little bit about verbal behavior as being part of the program. I know off air you've mentioned using ESDM. Can you tell us what the heck is ESDM? For those who didn't listen to the previous podcast with Jen Brzezanski, which you should if you're interested in ESDM, because that was awesome.
So pause and go back and then come back later.
I'll let Mary handle this one. I think she's got a little bit of a better handle on ESDM than I do, but I can tell you the title of it.
Go ahead.
It's Early Start Denver Model.
There you go.
That's as far as I'll get.
Yeah, so we use ESDM, I think for a handful, if not the majority of our clients within the program that get center-based services, but it really just is natural environment training. So we're just setting up and contriving different situations for the children to work on certain skills, whether it's play skills, social skills, even mealtime behavior, hygiene. So they honestly don't necessarily know that they're actually working learning. Or learning, but they are. And with that, we try to just make sure that we're not over prompting kids. So we might start with a more intrusive prompt initially. And then once they demonstrate progress or meet their mastery criteria, over time, they would be more and more independent with that skill until they master the skill. And then we move on to our next goal with them. And that's really implemented throughout the day from when they come in the beginning all the way through when they leave.
And I like the use of ESDM, you know, that it does feel more natural to both the kids, the therapist, and anybody watching. I kind of, again, jokingly tell parents that it's going to look like we're playing all day long, but we're not. In an ESDM session that lasts 15 minutes, we can touch on 10 goals, maybe even more than that if the situation calls for it, but all under the guise of we're having a great time. And that's really what is different about our early learners program, is that we make sure that the bad reputation that ABA has had in the past, that's not the ABA that we're doing. And this program of Early Start Denver model really allows us to do that, because the kids have fun when they come to us. The staff have fun when they're providing these therapies, and it's evident. It's evident in the results that we have for our kids, and it's also evident in the way that these families report back to us. Hey, we were able to play this game that we were never able to play before. We sat and played blocks for 10 minutes. And those are the things that we're looking for. Those are the things that we're searching is for those little things that parents come back to us and say, hey, we did this for the first time. And then to piggyback on that, my biggest search, I'm always seeking this, is he said mommy for the first time. Mm-hmm. Like, I remember very specifically the first parent that I had say that to me, and it caught me off guard. Mm-hmm. And it still does, but that's something that we're always searching, is those first. Hey, he did this for the first time. She said this for the first time. And that's really what we're always looking for in early learners.
And the connection is really there, like from that time and saying mommy or daddy all the way up through. I honestly, 10 minutes before we got off of here, I spoke with a parent, and he was telling me that the little girl that I worked with, who's now in an elementary school, no support, no additional supports, is in the gifted and talented program, which I'm like, oh, yay. That's so wonderful. Sure. And that isn't every child or anything. I'm not saying that's all results, but I would say that from listening to both of you, there are students who return to a district program or go to a district program with perhaps less services than when they started with you, what they would have needed.
Absolutely.
Would you find that to be accurate, that sometimes they can return? Okay.
Yes, and I would say that's one of the goals of our program, is to make sure that the kids that are coming to us aren't ready to be in the quote-unquote typical school setting yet. So we, as a program, strive to get them ready. We teach school readiness skills, so it is very typical for that to be the progression, that they spend some time with us, develop those school readiness skills, and then take that big leap back into their school setting.
How do you help to make that transition?
So I know we talked a lot about that one-on-one instruction, which is great. That's part of the program. But we also do have parts throughout the day where it is more of a group instruction to help prepare them to go to school. So we'll have like different activities throughout the day where our goal is for them to attend to the instructor and really just kind of respond when their name's called on or if they're asked a question to help them prepare for school. We also have different programs in place now, and I think our locations probably vary what we're working on, the different programs, what we're using, but I know we've recently incorporated different curriculums in place. So you're using what? Touch math,
Edmark, Handwriting Without Tears.
We're using Learning Without Tears. So I know we're trying to introduce, based off of the kids in the program, what's appropriate to help prepare them to be in that group format.
Do you ever communicate with maybe school districts, as that transition comes up?
Yes. So one of the benefits here too is between Mary and I, we both have experience working in school districts, and the consultants that we work with, they all have varying experience levels in working in schools as well. So we can offer parents advice. We can help coach them through that process. And we also know what is best for the kids, both with us and in the school environment. So we can help coach the schools, offer suggestions, provide recommendations to those schools to make sure that that child is properly served.
So when you have a student who returns to a school district program, as a clinician, do you feel that it's good for them to just transition and kind of be done with services? Do you ever feel like there's something else? Like, is it a cutoff when they're done? Like, oh, okay, you're in school.
So that's one of the great things about Interactive Kids is it's not just like, okay, you're done with early ABA services. You're done for now. Like, great, good luck in kindergarten.
Have fun.
Yeah, like, no, like, we have, like, a continuum of care. So we go all the way throughout adulthood. So it's not, oh, now I need to go apply because my kid's in kindergarten. You're just automatically then kind of transition to our next program, which would be the elementary program. So I have had clients that have, like, met age-appropriate levels with assessments, like, no target behaviors. I often would like to just kind of keep that parent caregiver training component just so parents know, like, things are great, but going to school is a huge, huge transition for kids and parents. So going to that new environment, that new routine, like, there might be, like, a small increase or maybe even a big increase or even new challenges that you're seeing. So I always at least initially try to maintain that open door with them that we can continue with that if they've met all of their goals and criteria, just because in case maybe the school has any questions. What have we done that maybe seemed to be super beneficial for the client, or what have we tried that really didn't work so well? So just to kind of collaborate with the school, even if they are no longer in our program, but to still have us available as a resource.
One of my favorite questions that I get asked is, when am I going to be done with ABA? When are we going to be done with ABA?
Never, right?
My answer is never. Yeah, never. Right. Absolutely. ABA, the principles of ABA guide our lives, whether you know it or not. Our behaviors are guided by reinforcement and punishment, whether we're aware of it or not.
That's right.
So my answer to that question is always never, which is always met with like a from the parents in so many words. But yeah, it just changes. It just the either the ABA therapy changes. It might go to like a parent training only model, or it might shift up to a more like social skills type of thing. And that's, again, Interactive Kids. You said it right. Interactive Kids has something for everybody. Mm-hmm. So when are you done with ABA? Never. Unless you're going to start coming to work for nothing at a job that you don't like, you're going to continue to be guided by ABA practices. It's just the therapy that we can provide might look a little bit different.
And then, but when are you done with receiving services through therapy or what have you in ABA? Like, how is that decision made? If, you know, if we were to have our druthers and make the decision of, okay, we were good. How do you make that decision? Like, the person no longer needs therapeutic services.
You have to look at the deficits that are present. And think of a game of whack-a-mole. One deficit might go away, but now we have a whole list of new experiences that are going to present new deficits. So if we're talking about early learners and early ABA, when are you ready to move on? When are you ready to go to a more typical school setting? That's where we would look at a list of school readiness skills. Can you sit and attend for an age-appropriate amount of time? Can you communicate at an age-appropriate level? Can you advocate for yourself? Can you say no? Can you, if I'm presented with a math worksheet and I don't want it, I want to be able to say, like, I need a break, or I don't want to do this right now. So those are just some of the skills that we look at, but it is very individualized and based on the deficits of the child to say when they are moving on, and that moving on where you end up might produce more deficits or more areas that we can help and help hone those skills.
I think one of the reasons I ask that is because I have seen providers continue to provide services when it isn't necessarily therapeutically needed. Sure. Are there things that always need to be worked on? Yes. I could probably put my own two children who are teenagers into some type of program four things that they need to work on. I think you guys are perfect, by the way, if you happen to do this.
Minus the picking up the towel situation.
Yeah, well, it did happen this morning, so miracles can happen.
Were they part of the bike gangs, too, or is that
what... No, that's a different town. That was Ocean City Bike Gang or Linwood. We had our bike gang, but then that's dissolved because now they can all drive. So it's similar things. We're just a, just across the bridge. So, yes, no, they're not part of any biker gangs yet. There's always
not
time.
Not yet.
There's always time for that. But I've seen it where people continue to provide therapy services, even when maybe a more typical type of environment could meet their needs. I think what you mentioned before is really looking at the assessment tools that you use and see, like, okay, you're now within developmentally appropriate ranges. If you're continuing to make developmentally appropriate gains, then having additional services isn't necessary at this point.
Right.
And it shifts sometimes, too, don't you think, Logan? Like, I would think that sometimes our younger peanuts might get some ABA-based services, but now there's some social-emotional issues that we maybe even couldn't even see or wasn't able to be expressed. Do you ever see that?
Yeah, I was almost thinking, like, the ABA part of it. If they're successfully functioning in their environment, like, maybe then ABA services isn't the therapy they're looking at. Maybe that is, like, that social skills piece and the counseling piece that we offer. I think that's where we can start reaching out to other things because... therapy never ends. Whether it's this therapy or that therapy, I say the same thing to my guys. I'm like, well, you could probably use therapy for the rest of your life. Everybody could. It's like, so never. But yeah, I think our little guys definitely, there's different pieces. And just like for adults, I think if we don't need help in this area, then counseling and social skills is definitely another one that could be ongoing.
But then I think about it too. Like there's the therapeutic horseback riding, right? My friend's daughter has Down syndrome and she's 19 and she does that every week for an hour. And that is really connecting with her and helping with her not just the body awareness and all of that, but the communication that's involved and being able to care for someone, something other than yourself. So that's another form. We talked to Heart of Surfing, for example, and getting out there and connecting with the water and the board and the people who help out with it. It is therapy.
Yeah.
If you were going to look at a definition, that would all fall within that. It just kind of has morphed into maybe less intensive and more, as you said, social skills based.
It brings up the concept of least restrictive environments, which is used often in schooling. And if the intensive level of ABA therapy is not your least restrictive option right now, we want to meet the kids where they are and meet where the needs are.
And it doesn't mean that, so we are more restrictive in that we're an out-of-district place where you would receive services. So technically that would be more restrictive per se, but that doesn't necessarily mean you're not going to be able to get some of these services within a district program. There are districts that provide applied behavior analysis based services. I guess that's where I look at what sets us apart is that some of what you had said previously, Mary, is like the freedom to be able to make some adjustments. So we can always... You guys can probably work on it here. Yeah, don't mind me just roaring out in the hallway.
Right. Our studio is in the middle of our building.
Yes.
So. We did say that it looks like we're playing all day.
It does. We are definitely playing. You can hear the thumping above us half the time. Because I don't want to poo-poo programs that aren't an intensive ABA-based program. There's a lot that can be said for them. Said for that, too.
That's a happy scream.
Yes. So, I'm like distracted by the person in the hallway. That's so funny. Is there anything that you wish that our clients and our parents knew that, we haven't really talked to them about? You know, anything that you wish that they knew?
Well, I know Nick and I kind of actually both had like the same response when we were discussing this before. That, like, everything that the child is doing is obviously behavior, but they're engaging in those behaviors because they're trying to communicate something, whether they want something, they don't want something, they need something, they want you to leave them alone. So all behavior is a form of communication. So that's usually why we try to prioritize communication, especially for our little guys, but honestly, everybody, teaching appropriate communication, whether it's verbal communication or if it's using PECs to communicate and express their wants or needs.
Yeah, also speaks to how we have such a strong department here. Mary and I are very aligned in our thoughts. I also think, that kids want their parents to know, this is what I'm saying to you. This is what I'm trying to say to you. I wish you knew what I was trying to say to you. I think there's times, too, where the kids might think sometimes, like, hey, I am still a kid. It is very important that we get the earlier that we can start therapies and the more intense therapies that we can start earlier, the better. But definitely let them be kids too. Not every single behavior is a problem behavior.
Right.
If they spilled something, if they knocked something over, guess what? There's other 3-year-olds and 4-year-olds in the world that have done the same exact thing. So not everything is a manifestation of having autism spectrum disorder. Sometimes it's just kid stuff.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Just kid stuff.
Yeah. Sometimes just a little bit bigger. The sure. reaction might be a little bit bigger. Not always, yeah. but sometimes it might right. just be a little bit bigger. And it's hard as a parent being in the community. I mean, I've been on both ends where I've been supporting parents and when I've been the parent, and your kid's having a huge meltdown and you're in the middle of Target and the police get called and you're standing there and you're having to deal with all of that.
Do you have something to tell us?
So that was actually work-related when the police were called, yes, yeah. because mm-hmm. that was like a dangerous situation. And I actually ended up having to hold the child to keep not just everybody else safe at that point, but to keep him safe too. But, you know, having to manage all your own emotions related to that. And doing this job, I know it's a lot easier for me personally to be able to just be like, I don't really care. I mean, like, as I'm 9 months pregnant, carrying my 1.5-year-old under my arms down the street, and they're like, the neighbor leans out the door, is that what I'm supposed to be doing? And I'm like, yes it is. When your child won't listen and they take off and they're 1.5, yes, you are supposed to get them back into a safe place and not let them wander. Yeah. Now we whooshed onto there. So tell us about like resources that families have. Are there any books or any other kinds of resources that you would recommend for parents? Where to even start? Because you get that diagnosis and it's like, you know, okay, let me start Googling things, right? That's what we all do. We go and we look on the internet, and that can be a deep dive into some things that may not be where you would want to start.
I know there's a lot of websites out there. Everyone has their own opinions, which is fantastic. But I usually try to direct parents to Autism New Jersey. I think it's a great resource for people that live in New Jersey. Another great resource that I've honestly been looking at more recently is the Council for Autism Service Providers. So it does seem like it's more or less for like us, like service providers, but it's also a great resource for families as well. And that's a great resource for people outside of New Jersey as well, because it really breaks down like insurance and what's appropriate for each of the states or what is approved. So as far as websites, I would recommend both of those websites. And as far as books, I would probably say ESDM, especially since we're really utilizing ESDM in our programming. It's something that I always suggest to parents, especially if we're using it in their kids' programming. There is a special parent version of the book that I usually allow the parents to use.
And it's on Audible as well. So yes. If you're driving around or you're a busy parent, you can definitely purchase that.
I even knew that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Yep. I'll put it in my my rotation of mm-hmm. travel books. So on top of like those more formalized things, I also think that parents should use your providers as resources. Mm-hmm. So talk to us. Ask us what you want to ask us, because sometimes it stays surface level. How did we do today? What are we working on? Mm-hmm. Is he performing X skill yet? Talk to us about other things. Talk to us about what we think in terms of sensory seeking things. We might say, okay, yeah, go talk to an OT and we can guide you in those and tell you about local places. I definitely think what my point is, develop a relationship with your providers. We can help you with a number of different things. Use us as a resource just as much as you might read that ESDM book or listen to it on your way to us. If we haven't dealt with it ourselves, somebody within Interactive Kids can give us some sort of guidance that we can then provide to you.
Yeah, that's great. Because I think it's hard too, trying to tease out what is just some flash in the pan. This is going to cure your child, or this is going to just cause some kind of great quick change. We all want the quick fix. We all would like to be able to say, you know, if you just do X, Y, and Z, then your child will be however it is that you're envisioning them. I think they're perfect the way that they are, but I understand society gets a lot easier if you do work on some of these things like communication, like managing behaviors that are more challenging, developing other skills that they need to be successful. So I would definitely, you know, just add that in there too, is to really make sure whatever you're looking at is a valid resource. And Autism New Jersey, I mean, they have the breakdown on their site of this is one of the services that are out there, and then they'll just they talk about it a bit about whether it's recommended or not to utilize that form of therapy. I get it though. Can't you see that if you're a parent and you're so desperate to find something that's going to help your child, and it probably won't hurt them, aren't you going to try it? I'd do anything for my kids. So you would take a risk on it.
Can parents reach out to you guys for a tour if they wanted to check out the program?
Absolutely. So if they want to reach out to me directly here at Linwood, or Nancy is our go-to person. But I'm more than happy to schedule a tour if anyone wants to come and visit our Linwood facility, as well as if they just want to have a conversation to discuss what our options are and what else we provide as far as services.
So that's Mary Usher, M. Usher.
At interactivekids.com.
You can find Mary and Nick's email below the episode. The end.
There you go.
Yeah, and likewise for our facility in the Cherry Hill area, we can, I'm open to touring and even just having a conversation. I find that sometimes just having those initial conversations with families, we get a lot of information exchanged in both directions. We can kind of help guide you and what is going to be best for your child, whether it's coming to us in that early learners intensive level of service, or maybe there's a different schedule of service that we can provide that would be even more beneficial to you. And vice versa, getting that firsthand information from the families, it helps inform our programming and helps us better develop more effective goals and treatments.
Do you ever provide any kind of workshops or trainings that you might put out there that might be helpful? I was actually thinking like for doctor's offices, or I believe someone was mentioning something about at one point first responders. Oh, that was you, Mary?
That was me.
Okay, what were you saying?
So just previously where I worked, obviously, I hope it never happens. But kids often come in contact with first responders, and especially if maybe they can't communicate like a typically developing child, they might be fearful, or the first responder might just think the kid's maybe not listening and completely unaware that the child has autism. So I think it's great to get out into the community and discuss what autism is and what it looks like, because it looks drastically different in every single person. So really just to kind of get the word out there and maybe some strategies of what they can do if they come in contact with some situations with individuals with autism. As far as providers, we're more than welcome if they want any information or training to schedule trainings for them. I know there is a training coming up at a daycare, so I know that's another option as well if other people are interested in maybe some trainings.
Great. Thank you.
Awesome. This was so amazing and wonderful. And, you know, to the parents out there who are listening, we really do hope that you will reach out to us if you have any questions. We're here. So now it is time for Logan to do her fun segment here.
Time for rapid fire questions. Mary's face just went blank. She's like, this was not on my list. No.
Surprise.
Here comes the test.
Oh, man.
If you don't pass, you have to do it again.
Wait, so how are we going to do this? One at a time?
Right. So I'm just going to ask a question, and then do you guys want to just take turns? Do you want to just blurt them out? What would you like?
We'll ask the question. Mary can answer, then Nick will answer.
Okay. Just the first thing that comes to your head.
I like it. All
right. Mary just left.
Preferably appropriate.
Logan already knows. Okay.
A four-letter word that starts with M.
Mary.
You can do N if you'd like.
N.
Four-letter word that starts with N? I don't know. Now you're going to make me
It's really
count.
Not that hard.
None? Is that a four letters?
Nick.
N-O-N-E.
Your name is four letters.
I know. That's not a word. That's my name. I wasn't thinking. Anyway.
Person, place, or thing. Favorite store?
Target.
I don't like any stores.
Amazon?
I don't like going to stores.
Nick, just make one up.
Is that your answer?
Home Goods.
We need to track this because most people say Target.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A tool you never leave home without.
I'm not handy at all, so no tools.
Think of the word tool in a broader definition, Mary.
Not me.
Don't be a concrete learner.
Think of my cell phone.
There you go.
Oh, that was a good one.
Keys.
You're not getting anywhere. No one has said that.
No, they haven't.
Literally can't leave without it.
Right.
stay in or go out?
I'm going to have to go with go out.
Stay in.
Your go-to lazy dinner.
That I can eat or what I would like to eat?
Because
my go-to classic that I haven't had like in a very long time is chicken parm.
You can make that gluten-free.
Why is that?
Oh, I have celiac disease, so I can't eat chicken parm. Or if I go to places, it's really just like grilled chicken with sauce and cheese, and that's disgusting. So I'm not going to order that.
Right.
So
I'll make you some gluten-free when we make it.
Thanks.
I'll bring it for you.
I think mine is tacos, which I think is a common answer you've gotten to this question.
Have you been tracking down?
Oh, so you're our one listener.
Right, he listens.
I'm just kidding.
No, like, how many people have done it?
It was just the one episode that I've listened to that somebody said tacos. I don't know.
That was probably Andrew's.
It is also a good gluten-free meal.
You can keep Yeah, like things that I can eat. Yeah. I probably eat tacos at least once a week type of Mexican food. Yeah, of course.
Favorite hobby?
Recently, I've been really into going to the gym.
I'm so proud.
My motorcycle. Yeah.
What?
Motorcycles, yeah.
Things I didn't know. Favorite.
Not in a biker gang, though.
Gluten-free pizza topping.
It's going to be controversial, but I love a Hawaiian pizza.
Yeah.
And this is where the podcast ends.
I'm pro pineapple on pizza.
I'm for it. I'm for the pineapple.
Oh, no.
The Hawaiian style. It's not my favorite. I like the works. I like it all. Mm-hmm. All the veggies, everything.
And anchovies?
No.
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 When if you order on there, it helps to avoid the gluten-free crust.
Well, that's true, too.
You put all that on there, it's not as gluten-free.
I've had some good gluten-free crust.
Okay. Yeah. You get used to it.
Right. Your favorite TV show? Not Grey's Anatomy.
I really like reality TV shows. All of the Real Housewives, I really enjoy those.
Which is so funny if you ever meet married. Like, I would not peg you as a Real Housewife.
Oh, my God. They're so good.
I really like the show Ghosts right now. It's a pretty good one.
You're going to have to tell
me. It's on CBS. A couple moves to, they try to start a bed and breakfast in a big old house, and the woman falls down the stairs and then develops the ability to see and hear the ghosts that have died on the property over centuries. So it's a comedy. It's not like a historical type of thing. It's funny. I like it.
So I'll have to tell the lady, our person we interviewed from A Mother's Rest, about that one, because she owns the company owns a couple bed and breakfasts. So that'd be kind of interesting. That's
funny. Your favorite rainy day activity?
Probably just lay in bed and watch TV.
Yeah, watching movies, sitting inside and watching movies. It's an excuse to watch multiple movies in a day, which is usually a, don't do that.
Right, lazy. Your life motto?
I always try to try everything at least twice, because the first time might not be that great, so I'll try it again the second time.
I was going to say the same thing, try again, because I get made fun of a lot, because foods that I know I don't like, I'll try it again just because. Activities that I know I didn't like, I'll try it again just because, but try it again.
Yeah, that's bizarre that both of you said that, though.
And, like, in your own way.
Are a lot of, like,
and that's not one that I remember from any other episode.
No, that's what I mean. No one's ever said anything like that.
That was on the spot. Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks.
Thank you, guys. It was awesome.
Yeah, we really appreciate it.
I actually have a couple of rapid fire questions myself.
Yeah, but Mary, they're not on the list, so I can't answer them.
Are we, like, your favorite interviewee so far?
Ooh.
You've been pretty good.
Megan's like, no.
You have been an excellent pairing to have. You're our favorite two people at one time interviewing.
Okay. She said you're our favorite, Nick and Mary.
Okay.
To interview.
I will say, I had prepared an answer to your rapid fire question of who's your favorite actor, and you didn't ask.
Well, so I vetoed that because
now you'll never know.
I didn't veto it, but I.
No, can you tell us?
Right, you can tell us. That was like. What's one question you wish we didn't ask you? Or
there you go.
No. What's one question you wish that we did ask you?
Well, my favorite actor is Michael Keaton. I had that one ready. Batman. Yeah, obviously. My wife and I have a running joke with our family, and my mother-in-law believes it, that the middle name of our firstborn child, male or female, will be Michael Keaton. All one word.
Wow.
My maiden name was Walsh, and my one word name was Megan Walsh.
Mm-hmm.
So they were my friends were not going to allow me to change my name when I got married.
So I just watched Dope Sick. What a great show. Mm-hmm. But also, he is one of the few famous people I've actually seen in person.
Really?
Mm-hmm. When I was in third or fourth grade, he filmed a movie called Clean and Sober.
Oh, I remember that.
In Gloucester City.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And I lived there at the time with my family, and I took a walk over there with friends and watched them film it. Yeah.
That's crazy.
Interesting. Mm-hmm. He is incredible.
All right, come on, rapid fire.
I can't believe he was angry about this.
Do you like Cherry Hill or Linwood better?
Whoa.
Okay. Yeah. I'm just kidding. All What's your favorite candy? I love candy. What's
Reese's
your favorite
peanut butter cup?
Jolly Rancher clusters. Not Jolly Ranchers. What are they?
What's a Jolly Rancher cluster?
They're nerd clusters. I was thinking Jolly Ranchers because you had one of my Jolly Ranchers.
Is it like a nerd's rope? Okay. Just
it's like
in small
the
pieces.
Berry berry ones are my favorite. I've been on a kick for the past, like, 2 months?
Okay. I would say Snickers.
I thought you were going to be like, well, I don't really eat candy.
Chocolate.
Well, I've got one for a majority of the shore dwellers here. Pool or beach?
Beach.
Okay.
Pool after the beach.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly. That's what we do. Oh, we're going to go home and rinse off in the pool. I'm like, no, we now have a shower outside.
Right.
Use the shower. Rinse off there and then get in the pool.
And then get in the
pool. Yeah. Or you're running the vacuum.
Don't bring the sand in the pool.
Yes, they can run the vacuum.
Yeah.
That's it for my
rapid fire. Why do you prefer pool or beach?
I think on beach. Well, I don't know. So it's different. I don't like going to the beach. I like being on the water, if that makes sense.
Like in a boat? Like,
yes. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Like not touching the sand?
That's not a sand thing. It's it's more of a boredom thing.
Yeah.
I get bored.
You don't bring a book?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but that bores me. Okay. I can only read for so long before I want to.
Yeah, Teddy's like that too. He's like, so what are we doing? He'll like be in the sand, like digging holes and then rolling around after he goes in the water. I'm like, that's repulsive. Mm-hmm. He just went in the water and then came out and rolled in the sand and expect to do what? Do what? You're gonna go home like that? Like a grown 5-year-old.
Oh my gosh, that's so funny.
Nope. Not it.
Well, thank you guys. Thank you
awesome.
Both
thank
very
you.
Much. This
course,
was
thanks
wonderful.
For having us.
For the entertainment.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening. Looking for more? Be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast app and Instagram at The Interactive Journey.
Questions, comments, or want to be a guest on our show? We'd love to hear from you. You can message us at podcast@interactivekids.com or on Instagram @TheInteractiveJourney.